Hello, everybody, and welcome back to United We Stand, Divided We Podcast. I am Robert from the good old US of A. And with us, we have, of course, Lionel from Mother Canada.
I don't know if we ever call it Mother Canada, but
it's kind of like motherland. So, you know, I just kind of threw that in.
Well, yeah, okay. Except I thought that was Russia. But yes.
I am from the Toronto region of Canada.
Yes, I did say Canada because that's how Americans pronounce Canada. But it's all in good fun. I don't know how to say Nashville properly with a Nashvillean accent either. So
yeah, Nashville. I don't do the country twang either. So
but you know what? Native Nashville isn't really a country twang. It's a Nashville thing.
You'd be surprised how much twang is around here.
In comparison to where there is no twang, yes. But if you compare it to, I don't know what, Alabama?
Yeah.
You're thinking about it for a second, but you know I'm right.
Oh, yeah. It gets worse as you get some of those other couple southern states there.
But. Okay. Now, you know what city I live in. So let's hear an American say the name of my city. Go ahead.
Toronto?
Uh-uh. If you ever come here and you want people to know you're a tourist, you call it Toronto. If you just want to, you know, wander around and hope that no one thinks you're a tourist, then you say Toronto. No, you don't Toronto. Say that. You say Toronto. No, I'm just kidding. People say that all the time, but it's Toronto. Notice I didn't say Toronto. I said Toronto. But you're saying the T, but it's so soft that it sounds like Toronto.
Right. It's kind of like in Kentucky, the city of Louisville. It's pronounced Louisville, but it's spelled like Louisville. And so you have people come in from out of town. They go, "Where's Louisville, Kentucky?" I'm like, "Louisville, Kentucky? Oh, you mean Louisville? Oh, okay."
Well, yeah, but that's common because Louis is actually an anglicized pronunciation of Louis. If you look at how
nobody
spelled,
pronounces it like that here. Nobody.
Right? But Louisville, I know that, but that's where it comes from because ville is French for, I was going to say French for town, but what is it French for? Is it
no idea.
House, home, or something like that? I can't remember. I don't speak French.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. We can get into that, but that's an interesting story about how all the relations between Canada and United States, or what would be Canada and United States. But anyways, our first topic we should talk about is internet access. I'm sorry, I got to look down at my notes. It's been a rough week. Yeah, put on my old man face again, which I always like to call it publicly. Internet access in the States, well, I guess what you call it, broadband disparity. You want to explain what we mean by broadband disparity?
Well, you know, one of the things that Lionel and I always talk about, because we also do some gaming and the different speeds and latencies, and we deal with different, packet loss problems and whatnot. And so we just kind of we're in a discussion one day talking about the differences, and we thought it'd be a good subject to cover here. I actually did a little research, and I found some things that were a little surprising to me, but I guess maybe they might not be as surprising to you as to some of the differences between the broadband here and the broadband there.
Well, some of the things might be surprising, but I'm not sure exactly which one you want to bring up first. I will say that in some areas, Canada is just now catching up to some of the things that have been around for a few years in the US. But at the same time, it's a little bit more common to have higher internet speeds, although albeit at a higher price, in more places in Canada per capita than in the U.S. But there's also a ton of reasons for that, though. If we want to talk about urban centers only, then it's pretty even across the board in most places. Except where in certain cities or regions in the U.S. and some states where service might be a little more limited to a couple of the big three or four. How many big ones do you have now? Is it down to two, or you still have four or five huge companies in most of the country?
Oh, no, I mean, there's several, and each region will have its own kind of specific carrier, but you know, you have the nationwide like Charter, which I guess is Spectrum now because they got bought out by Spectrum, Comcast, you know, AT&T, Verizon, Fios.
Right. And there's obviously going to be a lot of places like you know, in parts of Arizona, for instance, in New Mexico, where fiber optic is just not happening because, you know, you might come across 60 homes in 60 miles where yeah, it's just not a thing. So they have telephone lines, but they're not going to lay fiber optic or wire fiber optic out there.
Of course, which is, you know, Google's running their fiber in, you know, across the states. They've really slowed down in their implementation, but they're still implementing. Matter of fact, there's some new areas that just came live in Nashville.
Well, the thing about Google having to do that is because there's only two ways they can do it. One is either completely put up the infrastructure on land that they either lease or buy on towers that they lease or purchase, which has got to be in space that they have to either lease or purchase again, right? But a lot of it is dependent on systems that already exist. And I can't remember the right term for it, so forgive me. I probably should have Googled that before I came on, but when the telephone company, for instance, when they started putting telephone poles in back lanes on the front streets, but a lot of them ended up skirting people's yards. And I can't remember the right term for that, but a lot of people have fought over that in both the U.S. and Canada in some cases over why do I have to allow this? And it's usually written into the municipal bylaws, you know, decades ago, and in some cases over 100 years ago. And there's nothing you can do about it. You buy a home that has a pole on it, that pole's staying there until the company decides they don't want it anymore, which is not likely. I don't even remember what the heck I was bringing that up for because I was going on two different things at the same time. So let's go back to the last thing we were talking about, and hopefully I can remember it. I know it's one of those.
We were talking about availability and you know, the different carriers. You asked me about the different carriers. One of the things when I was kind of looking into some of these availability aspects that I think Canada and the U.S. kind of suffer from the same major rural disparity, where, you know, Starlink, you know, the Elon Musk internet, you know, Amazon has actually been approved to start mass testing their satellite-based internet. So you're going to have Amazon ISP, you know, that's satellite-based, is trying to, you know, correct that whole rural area. Now, I assume it is Starlink, right? The Elon Musk.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
I assume that's available in Canada, is it not? Because, I mean, that's like a worldwide.
It is. Like, absolutely, yeah. He made it available. I mean, the man basically works a lot faster in getting his approvals than Google does. Right? Yeah. He basically said, I got to put Starlink up, and 2 years after I have the testing done, it'll be available in Canada as well. And we're like, yeah, sure it will, buddy. And it was.
So it's like, yeah. So, and it's been here for a couple of years. I've had people that use it. It's fast and stable. So, I mean, it's...
Well, surprising. Your idea of fast is what? In Canada, I read what their Starlink, I think it was like 100 and some megabits per second up and 30 or something down. I'm like, or the other way around, sorry. To me, that's not fast.
When you're talking about satellite.
I know, I get it. I mean, because internet on satellite 20 years ago, which was actually possible through Bell Express View in Canada or, oh my God, what was it called? Your big satellite provider down south. Not down south to you, but
well, it used to be Direct TV.
But, yes, Direct. Thank you.
AT&T bought them out, so that's part of AT&T.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of Direct TV because Direct TV and Bell Express use the same equipment and the same technology. So oh my goodness, my brain is really not working today. They did use the same technology, so that's why I was saying it was the same, but. I literally am forgetting what I was going to say.
Again. Well, there was another major provider of cellular of satellite service called HughesNet, and I think they're still around. I've known a couple of people that's used it, and of course, this has been many years that I've experienced it, but it was I would rather use dial up, honestly, because the latency was like, oh my God, so bad.
Listen, that's what I remember. That's what I was going to say, is that back in the day, you had the direct, whatever it's called, or Bell Express here in Canada, and you could get an internet service off the satellite, but it was ridiculous. And as you said, I literally realized very quickly that it was much easier to turn on my 56K modem.
Yeah. And it was so expensive. It was insane. Like,
yeah. Meanwhile, my 56K modem was, who can give me free internet for an hour? And I'll just switch to the other free one for an hour after that. And yeah. I'll have to watch a couple of commercials. So what? But the thing about that's working, and I know that Rogers is doing this. I'm pretty sure they're not going to be the only ones, as Bell and TELUS around across the country. If they haven't started offering this, I'm sure they will very soon. They have a 5G service, which they just basically advertise blanket. But they really should focus on rural places where they actually do have cellular service. But I think the problem is that they launched a 5G mobile server, mobile home internet service, and they don't have 5G everywhere yet. They're still about probably 2 years away from getting every last corner done. But the vast majority of the rural areas in Canada are already covered by 5G. So there are communities that are as little as 3 houses and 2 farms. They have internet, they have 5G. Pardon me?
What are the 4G speeds there?
Actually, to be honest with you, if you're in rural Canada, your 4G speeds are probably faster than your 5G speeds.
Well,
almost assuredly. But there are places in the middle of Ontario where you can get no service and go 10 feet and get 125 megabits per second down. So if you got your 4G, you're likely going to get at least 50 or 60. I mean, they're not going to be gaming and streaming movies on 3 different TV screens at the same time off of one internet thing. But the bottom line is
usable.
It is. But, you know, I mean, there's other options too, because you have all these bundled services, and every time you add a phone to the line, you get another 8, 5, 10, 30, 50, or even 100 gigs per phone sometimes, depending on what you're paying for your family. If you got 3 or 4 kids and you give each one of them a phone and they all have 50 gigabytes each, or 20 even, 20 gigabytes each, you and mom have 100 gigabytes each, that starts to add up. Now you decide, okay, well, can I add my 5G internet thing to the same plan? Well, I don't know, but maybe not right now, but maybe they will in the future. That's got 500 gigabytes on it. It's not a lot. You know, when you're talking about TV, you know, stuff like that, that goes pretty quick. But if you have that, if you're going to stream on it all the time, you know, listening to music, watching movies and stuff. But if you add that to all your phone plans, then that becomes a thing. And you're not really going to have to worry about the speed as much, because every one of them has its own actual connection. They're separate. So they're not slowing each other down.
Right. Yeah. Now, I used the Verizon. I think I told you. Well, you know, I did. I used that Verizon 5G home internet to test it out. They gave you 30 days for free. So I used it for 30 days. Actually, it wasn't bad. I was actually impressed. It maintained a pretty stable 350 down and like 50 up. But the latency was much higher.
How much? Mm-hmm. What was the latency like on that one?
There were some times it was scared. Like 20, 30 milliseconds.
That's not that bad. I mean, it's not great sometimes for gaming, higher. But sometimes it's not higher. That bad. I mean, if you're just watching a movie and surfing the internet, it's not bad.
No, but in the gaming, I noticed it caused a lot of stuttering on my
end. Yeah, in gaming, it's not good. You want your stuff to be under 20 for sure. And if you can get 15, 10, even 5 or less, even better. I'm on fiber optic, and I think the highest I ever get is 6 milliseconds. So.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm on fiber, so if I'm connected through my main box that's connected to the modem, I'm, you know, 6, 7, 8 in that range.
Right, yeah.
It's fast.
Yeah, and it works perfectly fine. Oddly, even though your latency might be slightly higher, I seem to die more in modern warfare right beside you. It's like they know I'm Canadian and they shoot at me.
Right. Well, you do have the Canadian flag on your banner, so they do. You're broadcasting that you're Canadian.
We're new. Yeah, they're the friend. They're the friendlier guys in real life, and everybody wants to say hi to the guy, you know, with a Canadian flag on his shoulder. But in the modern warfare, now they're like, nah, look at this guy, get him.
Yeah,
quickly.
Do both of your fiber ISPs have multi gig plans where you live in Toronto?
I'm sorry, did you reword the first part of that again?
Your ISPs, you have Rogers and somebody else that
Rogers.
Do they
Rogers
all have multi gig speeds where you live?
Yes, but Rogers is a cable company, so the only fiber they have is to the node. And in rare cases,
fiber to your house.
They might do it to the curb, but they don't have any fiber right to your building or to your house.
Okay.
Or certainly not to your modem. They don't have the capability.
So you have one fiber company and one coax company.
What's that?
You have one fiber company and one coax company that can service
your house. Every other company is just this is hurting me. I think I need to go see a doctor about my lack of being able to remember things. MV or NV? Jesus, you know what I'm trying to say.
NVM something, yeah.
It's, yes. Yeah. Basically, they're piggybacking off of it. So that's the whole issue. So we got tons of those. I mean, it's like walking into a 7-Eleven to get a phone. It's a 7-Eleven phone. Those are all Rogers, by the way. At least they used to be. I don't know who they are now. You know, you can get a phone. I mean, at one point, Walmart sold a Walmart branded phone. Even thankfully, they gave that up. Although, honestly, if they had, I might have trusted it, because if you buy something that's on branded now, you know you could take it back without a problem in Walmart.
Yeah. Well, it's just like all these, you know, like Mint and Singular and all those other like nobody companies that are basically just tiny, small, little ISP, you know, cellular companies. They're all piggybacking off of AT&T or Verizon or whatever. Yeah,
except most of yours have really cool celebrities doing their commercials.
Well, he does own it, so I guess he can do his own commercials.
Wait a minute.
Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
But hey, he's Canadian.
Yeah, he is Canadian. Yes, he is.
But there's another Canadian that was doing a bunch of commercials. And now that I think about it, I think they were actually commercials for a Canadian company. Not one of the MVNOs, or however you say it, but one of the flanker brands from one of the big companies.
Yeah,
or at least they used to be. They may have been bought out by one of the other ones. So there may be a flanker brand of a flanker brand of a big company. Yes, that's a thing in Canada. You can be a flanker of a flanker of a big company.
Well, it's just like Comcast here. They offer cellular service, but they're piggybacking off of Verizon.
Yeah, who's that?
Comcast, the coax company. That's who services our area for coax.
I'm sorry, Comcast piggybacks?
They're cellular.
Oh,
they offer cellular service, and they piggyback off of Verizon.
When he said Comcast and Verizon, I automatically was just thinking internet again, not the cellular. Comcast is a huge cable company. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
Comcast. I don't know. Is Comcast second biggest or third biggest, or for cable? I mean,
internet. They're probably the largest in our area, at least.
Okay. Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. You could fit all of Bell's customers, all of Rogers' customers, and all of TELUS's customers in Canada into Comcast, and they would still be going, that's not enough. Well, we have a much smaller population. We, by the way, have officially, not too long ago, we hit 40 million people here. So, woo-hoo, we finally hit 40 million. Someplace you guys were in, what, 1883 or something like that? So we're in that neighborhood. Oh, maybe not, actually. It might have been later than that, because that wasn't that long after the war.
Yeah, no telling. I couldn't. I'd have to go back into the, you know, I'd have to go to the National Archives in Washington and dig through the Census Bureaus and not doing that.
Or you could just use Gemini. Yeah. Information is publicly available. All right. So we touched up enough on that, I suppose. As everybody knows, we'll just sort of summarize this. Is basically, while 10 years ago, even a few years ago, it was next to impossible for anybody to get anything other than dial-up out in rural areas, most rural areas in Canada right now have access to some form of a broadband, whether it be satellite, Starlink, which would be the better of the satellite options, obviously, and not as expensive as people think. It's not terrible compared to what the old satellite internet was. They also, depending on where they are, they might very well have 5G or at least 4G cellular internet service. And then if they do have cellular service with broadband on their phone, they have the ability usually to tether that. Tethering in Canada with any company does not require you to flick any toggle switches, ask permission, or pay extra. There is no such thing as no to tethering. I don't know if they just did that as a sales thing, or if it's written into law. I've never really looked into it because I never thought I had to. It's just not a thing. When people first started talking about whether they could be allowed to tether or not, it went away very quickly, like probably 2003 or four, the subject of tethering as whether you can or not was dependent on the phone you actually had in your hand, as opposed to the company that you were with. So I guess the any differences there would be in the States, because it's so much more people and there's so many of them in the middle of the country, but in certain areas, it's either less livable or just less appealing to live there for a lot of people. So you got huge swaths of places like Montana, Iowa with a lot of farmland and a lot of people spread out, Nevada, New Mexico, then of course, Colorado and places in the mountains, where you just either aren't going to get internet or there's not enough people to warrant anything being wired. And so you may even have dead gaps in those areas of even cellular service. So I would imagine that Canada might have a slight advantage in that area right now for rural broadband access.
Well, here's the crazy thing, and just a couple of points and we'll move on. But so where I live is a fairly populated, it's a little city. I mean, 35,000-40,000 people. 5 minutes away where one of my coworkers lives, no broadband, no cable, no AT&T, nothing.
5 minutes?
They just, if that. It's, wow. They just live like in this like little holler, they call it here. But they can't get any service out there. Now, I will say there's been a big grant that's been given to one of the local electric companies, and they are part of what they call Cumberland Connect, which is a initiative to get fiber run out into rural areas or more rural areas to where they can bring some broadband. So, but I thought that was just so insane because there's literally AT&T towers out there, and you know well that there's fiber ran to those AT&T towers. You know there is. They're not like all just connected. And, you know, Comcast is literally on the next road over, but they wanted like $50,000 to run a main line over to that road to supply that street. It's like, what? It just doesn't make absolute sense. But here's one thing that I think maybe might be different in Canada than here as to might be like a resolution to that. I don't know. Is the U.S. doesn't really have any regulatory hands-on type control over pricing and distribution and who puts what where. Whereas it seems to, based on what I was looking and researching, that Canada's government tends to have a little more of a hands-on approach and control over that. Is that Is that true? Do you find that to be accurate?
You mean oversight?
Whatever you want to call it. I mean, where it, they really, I guess, the providers, CRTC. Rogers. Yeah.
They have to abide by what the CRTC says they have to abide by. And there's not just that. There's other bodies involved, but the CRTC basically lays down the rules and says, this is what you have to have. CRTC is the reason why a specific amount of content has to be Canadian if broadcast in Canada. They're still trying to get them people to do this on the internet. And it's like they're not understanding. The internet is the internet, not the Canadian-a-net. Right. So if my content, if I want my content to all be Bangladeshi, that's my damn business. Right. I don't need you to tell me that I have to speak or have to watch anything that made in Canada when all I want to watch is movies from Fiji.
Well, do you find that helps with implementation?
Sorry?
Do you find that helps with implementation and like bringing out to new areas or it hurts?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't at all. The CRTC isn't involved in that part of it. There's another body. I can't remember the name of it. I'd have to check that out.
Oh, okay.
That's regulatory body. But everybody has a license to do something. And much like the wireless spectrum auctions that both our countries are still having to this day, although you're almost finished with yours, we still got another year or two to go before we can get the higher one. We just did the 3,500 megahertz last year, and it just got doled out in the last several months. Made a huge difference on my phone instantly, though, by the way, because they had already paid for it. They had to wait for it to actually be allowed to turn it on, and they flicked the switch one day, and my speed on my phone went up like 250 megabits per second, just like that, in certain areas in a half a block span, but it did become more stable anywhere where you could get faster speeds. So even if it slowed down, it was more stable. But
I was just curious. I didn't know if that was a negative or a positive in Canada.
It can be a negative because there's a lot of hoops to jump through. It's kind of like Google launching something and saying, "Well, it's available everywhere, but Canada." Well, if it has to do with language models, large language models, it has to be approved by Quebec because it has to meet their standards of their language, which is Quebecois, right? And not to be confused with French from France or Parisian.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. They're basically controlling the entire country's
ability,
technological infrastructure.
No, they're not. It's easy to put it on them, but they have the right to do that because it's their language and they're preserving it. And I understand that. But the problem is that Google doesn't feel that it would be pertinent or prudent or whatever the right word is right now to actually work on the app for Canadian English versus American English and put it out immediately now, saying that French Canadian will be added later when it's approved or when it's finished. What they could do, however, and this is boggles my mind, is they could just say this is for Canada, but it's British English because we use the same language as in Britain in Canada. We spell things differently than you guys in some cases. Right. Sometimes we put an E at the end of a word where you don't. Sometimes we pronounce things slightly differently. And it is much closer to British English, but much closer to an American accent, or at least a Minnesota accent, as if I were from Minnesota. Have you ever been to Minnesota? Minneapolis, Minnesota, St. Paul?
My sister lived up in Wisconsin, and my kids currently live up in Wisconsin. I've never been to Minnesota.
That's so amazing. It's like, honestly, it's not like you can just cross the border between the two states and it's instantaneously changed or anything. But it is remarkable how fast you can actually hear the difference from one city to the next in only the, however many hours, it's 5 hours or 4 hours, whatever it takes to drive there from between one to the other. So it's like, and I've done it, right? So I hear people, and they're saying, you go to the store and say, yeah, do you have any chocolate milk in your store or whatever? I don't know why I said chocolate milk, by the way. I guess I have a craving for it now. And they say, yeah, you go over there and it's over there in the back, eh? Well, they don't say, hey, that came out as a Canadian. I did, my apologies. But you drive a couple more
Minnesota,
hours.
You're in Wisconsin.
You're in Wisconsin. And he asks the same thing. He says, yeah, go over in the back and it's in the back. It's in the back. It's Wisconsin. And then it changes drastically in another 45 minutes when you get to Chicago. It's like unreal. It's like,
well, you can tell the difference between a New Jersey and a New York accent, which is
huge.
Crazy.
Huge. But there is a similarity, though.
If they're literally across the river.
Yes. If you listen carefully, or if you used to know anybody from there, you can hear the difference. But you can also hear the similarities between New Jersey and New York, especially those that live very close to New York, or a lot of people in the Brooklyn area that are actually close. You know, there is a similarity in it, but yet hugely different. But it's also, you know what, though? You can hear the difference between somebody who lives in northern Texas versus southern Texas. So...
Well, Texas is the size of half of Canada, so that's huge.
No, it is. No, please, you could fit two Texas in Ontario.
Yeah, no, I
didn't know that, did you? You could put two Texas.
It's funny though when Ontario. They talk about some of the European countries or Middle Eastern countries, and they say like, "Oh yeah, like all these countries can fit inside Texas." You're like, "What?"
Crazy. You know what? You could put. Let's see. You could put France, Germany, and Portugal inside of Quebec and still fit probably, I'd say, North Dakota, maybe something along that line, inside of the province of Quebec. All of that would go in there easily. And you'd still have several hundred square miles left over. Not quite as big in Ontario. Ontario's more spread out because it goes a little further, but Quebec is so massive. Most people have never seen most of it. It's like that big. It's like most people have. There's untapped wilderness in Quebec. Not a lot of untapped wilderness in Ontario. It's just a lot of lakes and places where it gets too cold to go. Simple as that.
Well, in the winter. That's a good segue into the e-commerce side of things that we wanted to.
That's a segue to e-commerce.
Because market size obviously has a lot to do with
very
e-commerce.
True.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of e-commerce going on in Tuktoyaktuk, I imagine, but I might be wrong. It is actually in a town, and they do have internet, so maybe there is. Maybe they have lots of people with investments.
They got e-commerce. I bet you Amazon delivers out there.
If Amazon delivers out there, it's not free delivery. When you live up north in Canada. Like, I don't know what it's like in Alaska. It's probably very expensive. But up north in Canada, when you get up over that Arctic Circle region, in Northwest Territories, Nunavut, and Yukon, even some communities in northern Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta, and northern Ontario, it costs upwards of $15 to $20 for 2 quarts of milk.
Yeah.
Like, a pound of ground beef is like $40 a pound. Like, you got enough for like 4 hamburgers, man. Are you kidding?
Well, like, everything's got to be airdropped.
Where did they get their money from is what I want to know. What job are you working that you could afford a $40 hamburger with nothing on it? But sign me up.
Yeah.
If I can go there for 6 months funny. To make that kind of money, come back. Lie around in bed with my $40 hamburger, so you're happy. But okay, let's move on to proper e-commerce talk. That was a little fun. I'll let you start that one out.
Well, what surprised me is that, and I think we actually have figured this out because of some things I've shipped to you, but U.S. is far less likely to purchase from Canadian retailers because of the shipping and tariff costs.
Yes.
But Canadians will purchase more so from American companies. So I don't know if there's like one way is cheaper than the other. I don't really understand the whole tariff thing, but I just found that to be weird that it's like you're supposed to be like, you know, best friend, trade partners and all that. Yes. And it's like, it seems like it's just makes it more difficult. I don't know.
Well, in some ways, yeah, but there's a couple of different reasons. And let's first of all call it what it is. A lot of the reasons that a lot of Americans will not buy from Canada, e-commerce wise, is patriotism. Buy American. It's a thing. If you live near
the border, I know, yeah, for sure.
You will happily take your money and save 30% on the exchange alone. Drive over the border. You've already saved more than the gas on what you want to purchase from the difference, just from the exchange rate. But also your money goes a lot further there anyways, or here, right? So if you come here with $500, you've got $800 and some odd to spend. Like, it's like, this is insane. Or 700 or something, I can't even count. But it goes a long way. So it's a huge thing, for instance, if somebody's in Buffalo or Niagara Falls, especially, because they just go over the bridge from Niagara Falls to Niagara Falls, they spend $300 at the casino, and they go home and go, oh my God, I just lost $100. I said, well, how much is, said, you only lost 100? I said, well, no, actually I only lost 70, but
yeah,
you know, yeah. Or they win, you know, and it doesn't end up being as much back. But the thing is that you can, your exchange works so well that it makes difference. So people, they might come here and buy something and then go back. But e-commerce, we don't really have a lot of big, huge e-commerce companies that aren't connected or to US or a subsidiary of a US company, unless they're specifically meant for local. So that's one of the other reasons that the Americans,
I think, don't. Also a big part of that, and we've discovered that as well in some of the things we've done, is that the payment system is terrible across the border. And I mean, there's so many options here, and you just don't have that many options there that are the same. So we have to find other methods of transacting, you know, cash transfer, yes, or whatever. Yes,
yeah, the cash transfer is a different story. And that's not necessarily just e-commerce, but it does make a difference because you can use most of those cash transfer services as payment services in the States, whereas we have a couple of them that can be used only for payments but not cash transfers, or they can be used for both, but you can't, like, for instance, in Canada, you can't connect your you can connect your I wanted to say eBay, not eBay, what do you call it, PayPal account to the bank, but that's only for the purpose of taking money from your bank. It will not put money into your account. You have to actually request it back out, and it's not the same thing. It doesn't go into your bank, and I don't know why they can't do it. I do know why, because in order to be able to do that, they have to consider themselves a bank, so they have to pay a different level of insurance rates, register as a bank. If you do anything to do with credit or being able to connect to a bank, you have to be registered as a bank. So Wise is smart. Wise does do that. And they do allow it. So it can go both ways with Wise. But Wise also has
to be actually,
because they use a debit card. In order to use a debit card in Canada, you have to be part of the debit card network. Being able to connect to a bank, you have to be registered.
Yeah.
Card thing, which can be sort of seen as a credit card or a debit card, depending on where you go or where you purchase something, plus sending money back and forth, which is, as you found out, is dirt cheap compared to everyone else.
Yeah, it's just weird though that there's just not many options. You know, I had to go digging for options.
Yeah,
I found that one company that, you know, we started using.
Yeah, well, that is the reason. It's basically because in Canada, in order to be able to do that kind of business, you have to be considered or registered as a bank. So Rogers, for instance, wanted to have their own credit card as opposed to just offering in-house credit. It had to, wanted to have a credit card. Well, they have to be listed as a bank. So there's Rogers Bank. Bell does the same thing, Bell Bank. right? Every other company, all these other companies, these stupid payday loans, do not use payday loans. Tip of the day.
Who Anyways, would do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I say that. I have, really.
I have no idea.
There's one on every corner here. There's one on every corner here.
I've done it, and I've gone through a bankruptcy. Luckily, I came out the other side. I've got credit again. I've got a car, so on and so on. But it's hard. It's very difficult. You end up going to more than one payday loan so you can pay off the other, and then you go to a third one to pay off the second one to pay off the first one. It doesn't work. Stop doing it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, in order for them to do that at all, they all have to be considered banks. Now, because they're banks, that means they report every last thing except payday loans being sent to you. So if you take money from them, they don't say, oh, he took money from us. They don't report that you paid it back. They only report when you don't. So it's an absolutely horrible thing. So that's, by the way, one thing we do have in common, except that in the States, they don't have to be considered a bank, I don't believe. Or maybe they do, but it's independent because you have an independent everything in the U.S.
But well, yeah.
Nonetheless, you probably even more payday loan options in the U.S. than we have here, which, in my opinion, is not a good thing. But it's
yeah, like I said, there's something on every corner here. I mean, and it's ridiculous. That,
well, it is on every corner.
There's certain laws in place that prevent. I say high interest rate, but I mean, when you're paying 50-60%, that's a high interest rate.
That's a high interest rate.
But I think they cap it. You know, they have at least like, oh, you can't go over that. I mean, it's
right. Yes.
I think they take advantage of, a lot of people who.
Well, they did cap it in Canada. They did cap it. But keep in mind, if they cap it at 35%, whatever it is, I'm not sure. That's still 35%. You have to pay back within 2 weeks. Unless you get a monthly salary, then you have to pay it back in a month. So you're like, okay, I get paid tomorrow, so they're not going to make me pay it back until next month. So I'll borrow $1,000 off of my $2,500 check, which would be a little on the pathetic side. But nonetheless, you know what I'm saying? So then that check comes and you owe $1,700 for your rent. And you have to pay back $1,400 to these people right now. What? How does that work? Mathematically, it doesn't add up. So what you do is you pay it back and then you borrow it immediately. You've already lost a few hundred dollars and you've got to pay your rent. Yeah. And then when the next month comes, you got to do it again. So you lose $300 every month until you get to the point where the payday loan doesn't work anymore. So you go to a second one. I don't know why I'm ranting about this. We were going on a little too long about that one. I'm very passionate about that. And I say, don't do it.
Well, no, I agree. And I, just in talking about regulations, it was one of the things that I realized that, well, what I found out through researching is apparently Canada has much higher regulation restrictions regarding consumer privacy, the data protection, online sales taxes, and all those things that the U.S. doesn't necessarily. I mean, I think they leave it more up to the companies and the banks as opposed to a government oversought, regulation. Do you find that your online privacy is more protected than the U.S.?
No. Absolutely not. They might say that that's the regulation for online privacy, but that makes jack squat difference between Canada and the United States about whether you're safe or not. First of all, if I decide to log into a website or a service that's American and not Canadian, which I can do on the internet freely right now, Canada has no say in that. So there's no protection in that area. Now, when it comes to local things and your banks and whatnot, it does kind of help in some areas simply because most of the banks now are going with the suggestions, which are not necessarily law, about how they have to do logs. There are some laws about it, but while everyone is up to a little under a year ago, we're still saying, oh, we have to have two and three factor authentication. It's the only way to do it. And they're all going, oh, eventually you're going to have to do three-factor authentication. We're not going to let you in the bank unless you do it that way. But then somebody came up with the idea and realized, well, wait a minute, we have the ability to do security with two-factor authentication where you really only have to do one thing. Thankfully, because it was going that way. So most of the banks in Canada are now fingerprint and or face and PIN or password backup. No big deal. You don't need any third-party apps. There's no
fingerprint. Wow. So you would go, when you go to the bank, you have to give a fingerprint to take like a withdrawal or something? Is that what you're
saying? Not in the bank. That would be cool as a hell. I would love that. Are you kidding me? Put your thumb down.
Where do you put your
finger? Now, if you walk into the bank, you have to actually stick your card in. You can't even tap it. Oh, sorry. That's not true. One of the branches I go to changed that just a few months ago for the first time. You can actually tap your card now.
Well, who's taking your fingerprint then?
I'm talking about the phone on your phone or tablet or
whatever. Oh. I thought you were talking about
one. I didn't make that clear, but because we were talking about e-commerce and we're talking about security and online.
Yeah. Okay.
So, right. Yeah. The app on the phone. Hey, listen, I've been contagious. Apparently it's gone over the internet and caught you.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. So, you know, I just basically now, and not that this wasn't already a thing, but it's much more secure now when you go in because it's either using two-factor authentication behind the scenes, which is working. It's very perfectly working. And of course, if you use a different phone or a different tablet or a website from your computer to get into that bank or whatever, you get one of those emails and a notification saying, hey, was this you? You go, yes, yeah. It was me. So on and so on. So it's easy to track.
So I'm curious of something. Do you find the general population in Canada is very resistant to using the two-factor, or like, does everybody like, yeah, let's do it. That's great.
It's about the same as in the US. It's the tech people are like, no, I'm going to do it because I'm not, you know, I don't want to say it because it's a smart thing to do. Whereas other people are like, I don't have time for that. Just help me turn this on.
Yeah.
Until so I can watch my show.
And then they'll have time for it.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about it, originally two-factor authentication was a bit of a pain in the butt, but technically easier than later implementations when you get, say, that Google two-factor app, if you remember that thing, and it would do its code generation stuff, but you only had to have it open. You didn't have to necessarily write down the codes, but then you could save those codes and put them in a zip file and password protect it.
Well, those are backup codes that don't change as opposed to.
Yeah, I know, but do you see the look on my face right now? You see the flaw in that system? You lose your computer and you lose the codes. The other thing too is if somebody knows how to get into that shit, if they can hack into it, they're going to see it anyways. So it was kind of like that. But luckily they've kind of moved away from the app. And then of course now we have what do you call it now? It's happening to me again. The new technology that they're using where you only have to use your face or fingerprint, or if you prefer a PIN.
Biometrics?
Whatever. Well, no, actually, he doesn't have to be biometrics, but use biometrics. But I mean, the new system, like everybody's doing, so you don't have to enter your password every time when you go to various sites. Passkeys, thank you very much. Passkeys, yes, this is a big thing. And of course, everyone's supporting it. Virtually everyone that matters is supporting it, and it's rolling out faster and faster. I've noticed four or five new companies that I've done business with in the last month have suddenly joined in on the passkey thing. And you know, it's just going to get more and more as it gets more popular. More apps are going to be like, yeah, let's just use passkeys. And because I was already using Google password app, whatever it's called, I basically felt like I was doing everything the right way anyways, because if I typed it in, I just had to put it in. I didn't have to remember any passwords. So I got to the point where I could put whatever I want in. But the latest one I did, what is it? It's SteelSeries. I had deleted it and I'd forgotten the password. So I did enough. No, it wasn't SteelSeries. I lied. I'm confusing two things I had to install very recently today. I just recently bought a Bluetooth OBD2 scan tool thing for my car. so I could clear some codes. And I had to install the app. And of course, they said, you have to have your account thing, whatever, right? And immediately, I went to put it in and started asking about it had a big long thing, and it specifically said, you do not need to remember this.
Interesting.
Like, good. So I hit the button.
Yeah.
It's good to go. And if I go check it right now, it's there. It's in my Google password thing, which I actually have to use my fingerprint pin or pattern to get into from any device. It's impossible to go into it unless you know one of those three. And so there you have it. It's extremely secure. It works the same anywhere, really. So in Canada and the States, that's the same idea. There was something I think that you were interested in knowing about, seeing which country seems to have. Oh no, that's the one you just asked me. Never mind. Stricter consumer protection laws, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, I do think for the most part it is Canada, but some states might have a few things in there that might go a little further than Canada. I'm not sure.
Yeah, which ones. I don't. I mean, you know, you always get those boxes that pop up and say, agree to terms and services or you can't do this. Who reads it? Who reads anything about privacy? Who reads about terms of services?
Yeah. Most people click it.
I mean, I'm blamed too, because if I want to get somewhere and I know I want to get there, I know I want to go and purchase or whatever it is, I'm going to click it. I mean, because I can't get in there if I don't. You know, that's the whole point.
That's true. But, in most cases, you don't have a choice. If you want the service, you haven't got a choice.
I think it's just more of a CYA for the company is all it is.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But in most cases, it's not a big deal. Like, for instance, when they talk about the privacy thing, the only thing I care about is, are they trying to sell my information? Because if they're a company that's selling the information, I don't know how interested I am in that. If they're just using my information as an aggregate to research, go nuts. I don't care. It's not like you're publishing my last name and my address. There's no way you can Google last time I ate or what store I went to. Google ain't going to tell you that. Google knows because Google Maps. My tracking is on my phone 24/7. So it knows where I went to the store and when I went to the store and what store I went to. But it ain't going to tell you that. And they don't sell that information. So I'm fine with that.
Right. And what's nice about Google is they give you an auto-delete feature. You can set up auto-delete in certain time frames.
Yes,
I have mine exactly. Every 90 days, mine wipes out. So it's just...
Yeah, I haven't
wiped mine out because 90 days
I like to look back at it. And also the other thing too is I do this honestly. I swear to you, no word of a lie. I've had a couple of close calls in my life. I remember when I first moved to Calgary and I was doing temp work and I basically had to get up at 4:30 every morning, walk 3 kilometers downtown to go line up. Back in the days when that's how you got temp jobs, you lined up, told them you were there, and you waited at a table out in the lobby for anywhere from a few minutes to half the day, hoping they would say, okay, we got some place to send you. And I was on my way the one time, and just before I left the house, I was listening, I was watching the news channel, and they were talking about a guy who just finished robbing somebody on the street or something like that. And they described him as approximately 5'9" tall, black, short, curly hair, looks very half black, half white. And you know, wearing a brown jacket, which I was wearing. I swear to God, I was so nervous walking down the street. Every time a cop went by, I went, oh God, please don't do this to me. I didn't do this. I don't know who this guy is. But he's describing somebody that looked exactly like me, down to the blue jeans I was wearing. I'm like, no, thankfully that didn't happen. And that very day, while I was waiting to get a job, some other guy came in and asked me if I wanted to work. I said, what do you think I'm here for? And he said, probably to work. And I said, yeah. He says, well, I can offer you a job right now. And my first thought was, what are you trying to ask me? Because I'm not interested. But he was legit, and I worked today. I went with him to the company. He gave me $100 advance because he needed somebody to work right away. He was willing to train right from out of the gate, but he didn't want to pay for a temp. So he just offered me the job right then and there. We drove down to the place and he gave me the $100 so I could get by for the first week. And I worked there for almost two years before I decided to move back to Winnipeg. So it was a wonderful experience, but nonetheless, there was one other thing I think we needed to bring up, or do we have, you know, we do have to, what was it? No, that one's too deep.
I'm done. I don't.
I was gonna bring up one thing because we're getting pretty close, but we can't really talk about the whole cybersecurity and data privacy thing in depth right now. We don't have enough time left. So I guess I will just mention really quick. One of Canada's former prime ministers, Brian Mulroney, passed away last week. And to be honest with you, I don't offhand remember the exact date. But one thing about Brian Mulroney was, at least as my memory goes, he was like the last of those politicians that, you know, like every politician, he does some stuff right, he does some stuff wrong. Some people like him, some people don't like him. But he acted like a human being that you felt like you would like him outside of his office. There's not a lot of leaders in the world that have that kind of personality and persona, right, or the way they do business anymore right now. No offense to Joe Biden, because he might be a really sweet dude. I don't know. But he doesn't come off as someone who would give a crap ass about you standing on the street corner 10 feet away from him. And I'm not insulting the man in any way, shape, or form. But he just doesn't look like it matters to him. And I don't even have to mention the other guy. I don't want to, but even in Canada, the last few prime ministers we've had, no, absolutely not. No, they're holier than thou and Hitler-esque are names that come to mind for the last two, respectively. So that said, rest in peace, Brian Mulroney, the last of the true politicians who could still be considered someone that I would sit down to dinner with outside of your working hours.
Human.
I actually wish I could have had the chance to meet him because he was the last of his kind in Canada. I don't know who was the last of your kind there, but that's a good segue into if you want to have anything to say about your situation.
No, that's going to be another whole topic. Because it's going to be crazy. This election year is going to be something.
So, yes, when I was a kid, I do remember watching I'm Just a Bill, Just a Lonely Old Bill, Sitting Here on Capitol Hill. Still one of my favorites.
Yes, yes.
So, hilarious. And, you know, it confused me because I would ask, how's the bill pass? And somebody, you know, like a teacher would say, that's not for us. And I like, but they wouldn't explain it. So I didn't know. So I, for probably till I was 10 years old, I actually thought that we did everything exactly the same way that you guys do on how things were done. Don't get me wrong. A lot of it is, but we'll talk about that next week. That'll be something interesting. We can give people a little bit of insight on how, if you're Canadian, you get to learn a little bit more about how the American system works. And if you're American, we can show you or tell you how the Canadian system works. And both of them have advantages and disadvantages. So,
yeah.
With that said, I believe we can probably wrap it up for today. So let's close it out. What do you say?
Let's do it. So, okay. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we hope you're enjoying this content. So make sure you hit that like and subscribe and leave us any comments. And we will catch you on the flip side.
See you later.